My name is Kevin Cookagee, and it is my pleasure and my honor to have been asked by the Philadelphia Society to chair this panel, especially thanks to Bill Campbell for your invitation. By way of introduction, I am the current chairman of the Williamson County Republican Party, Williamson County, Tennessee. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with Tennessee geography, Williamson County sits smack dab in the middle of the state, just south of Nashville. In 2010, Williamson County was designated as the most conservative-friendly county in all of America. Yet, despite that designation, I can tell you that our county, and lo, our state, continues to be active in the transfer of power, a precipitous transfer of power, I'd say, from the local communities to the state government, to the federal government, and to international bodies, under such fashion as, we talked about in the last panel, global sustainable development, regionalism, and any other nefarious form of Agenda 21, common core standards in education, and even healthcare exchanges, to name a few, all of which I think are brought about by the unfortunate ignorance of our citizens to the very principle of federalism and the foundations of liberty in American order. Our panel today is comprised of three very accomplished gentlemen whom I will introduce in short order to discuss very specific aspects of federalism in the rising generation. But I first wanted to set the stage because I would argue that, save for some of the men and women in this room, if you ask most of the rising generation about the principle of federalism, they would not be able to articulate a response. A couple of years ago, I launched a small organization by the name of Linchpins of Liberty, which is an American leadership development enterprise. And our motto is to challenge the imagination of the rising generation. As a side note, apparently this was deemed a threat to the federal government because last spring my organization with scores of other conservative-leaning organizations were singled out for extra-constitutional scrutiny by the IRS. You may have followed this in the press when it broke last February, but among other things, the IRS has inquired of the names of my donors, the names and addresses of the students that I mentor, the content of the philosophy that I teach, and my political position on virtually every issue of the day. We refused, of course, and our case is being handled by Jay Sekulow and the American Center for Law and Justice on First Amendment basis, and Congressman Daryl Issa has also opened up a congressional investigation. In any event, in 2008, the younger generation, or what Russell Kirk referred to as the rising generation, and by voting age we would define that as those between 18 and 30, voted for Barack Obama by a margin of 2-1. And we can therefore infer certain things about what the rising generation believes, especially with respect to federalism. Moreover, in June of this last year, just June 5th, a Pew Research poll indicated that young people are less engaged in political matters, less religious, and therefore, consequently, more inclined to believe that the government is good. On virtually every issue of the day, young Americans offer little intellectual resistance to the expansion and concentration of federal power. How in the world, then, can the rising generation be expected to restore something, in this case federalism, which the data would seem to indicate they never knew existed, or toward which they were little inclined in the first place? Many Americans, especially among the rising generation, no longer believe in the purpose, the destiny, or the moral superiority of the American order. Most suffer under the illusion that all political regimes, all governing philosophies, are morally equivalent. Hence, few are able to argue, to analyze, or to defend our way of life. I would submit, therefore, that before the rising generation can be expected to restore federalism, they must become philosophically sound. Does the rising generation understand, for example, that the superiority of the American order is not supported on some belief that we are intrinsically better people or that we have organized a perfect society, but rather that our forms of government and civil society, founded as they were on natural rights, inalienable endowed by God, form a societal regime that is more consistent with human nature and the natural order of the universe? Does the rising generation understand that absent a moral order, what Russell Kirk would refer to as order in the soul, there can be no lasting community order? Do they apprehend the permanent problems of the human condition which led our founders to structure in the first place an enduring constitution whereby men's tendency to fraud and violence could be restrained without unduly infringing on the liberties of the people? Does the rising generation fear government of the multitudes as much as they would fear, if they do, tyranny of centralized power? Or have they uncritically accepted the false philosophies of Rousseau's general will? And what of the subtlety of evil and the deception employed by those who seek our end? I'm continually perplexed at the inability not only of the rising generation, but even of our political leaders to look beyond the face value of words. Yet this is the trademark of the left, masquerading as something that it isn't. I think we would do well to remember, after all, that the Communist Party USA slogan was peace, jobs, and democracy. Yet incredibly, it never dawns on some Americans that the enemies of freedom would employ a strategy of deceit. Though ordinary Americans may recognize the danger of totalitarian schemes and regimes in full bloom, their inability to articulate the moral argument against them in their more insidious stages of germination has permitted these foreign philosophies to take root, choking the American freedom philosophy. 19th century philosopher Orestes Brownson captured the essence of this problem and why it exists when he said that socialism conceals its true character from the undiscriminating multitudes. Appealing to the dominant sentiment of the age and to some of our strongest natural inclinations and passions, it asserts itself with terrific power and rolls on its career of devastation and death with a force that human beings in themselves are impotent to resist. Men are assimilated to it by all the power of their own nature and by all their reverence for religion, yet their very faith and charity are perverted, and their noblest sympathies and sublimest hopes are made subservient to their basest passions and their most groveling propensities. Here's the secret to the strength of socialism, and here's the principal source of its danger. It appeals, as Jonathan Edwards would say, to our religious affections, to our emotions, and to our hearts. Brownson went on to say that men are little moved by mere reasoning, however clear and convincing it may be. They're moved by their affections, passions, instincts, and habits. John Adams agreed, saying that while reason is the guide of life, the senses, the imagination, and the affections are the springs of activity. The left has always understood this. They have unfortunately mastered the technique, and we see it manifest itself today in every expansion of federal power to the detriment of liberty. The rising generation must understand this, and they must believe in the fundamentals of the American order and be aware of the character, the nature, and the defects of competing philosophies. Then, and only then, can we have any meaningful discussion about restoring federalism.